The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello, I'm Kiran Kapoor, and today we're going to be discussing the use of humour in marketing communications. My guest today is researching the use of humour, but with a background in the British Army, he's particularly interested in how you use humour to build trust.
Humour doesn't work uniformly depending on the culture. I need to be mindful, if I'm going to overlay humour in the communication context, of the cultural differences.
And to explain ideas.
If British Airways had got that message wrong, people could have died. And so that really struck me, that.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College.
But I thought we would start with looking at the rules of humour in marketing and advertising. It always comes as a shock to people that there are actually rules for marketers. I so often hear the phrase cynical marketing ploy, as though marketers are these free agents that can do anything they want. But actually, we are tied by the CAP and the BCAP codes, which are the Community of Advertising Practice and the Broadcasting Advertising Practice codes, which are actually administered by the Advertising Standards Authority. And it is possible for anybody to complain about an advert if they feel that they break these codes. So using humour in the codes is allowed, but with very strict limits. You're not allowed to use humour that might cause offence. And clearly that can be quite an interesting balance that the Advertising Standards Authority often has to rule on, whether something is actually offensive or whether it's actually funny. But there are specific areas where you have to be very careful about the use of humour. For example, you are not allowed to use humour in any way that might encourage underage drinking.
The code prohibits alcohol ads from being directed at under 18s through the selection of media, style of presentation, and content or context in which they appear. That means marketers have to take care not to use characters, real or fictitious, that are likely to appeal particularly to people under 18.
Not only do you have to be careful about the actual jokes that you're using, but if humour comes across in the selection of the media or the presentation, you also have to be careful.
Marketers should also be mindful about the selection of media, style of presentation, content or context in which ads appear.
Another area we have to be very careful of is in the use of humour where it might be considered to be sexist. And this has become one of the more controversial areas in advertising, and an area where people are often complaining about adverts, where the ASA has sometimes had to rule very carefully as to whether something is viewed as sexist or viewed as just being humorous.
The use of humour or banter is unlikely to mitigate against the types of harm or serious or widespread offence identified in this guidance.
My guest is David McGee, teaching fellow at Birmingham City University, who's researching a doctorate in the use of humour in communications. David, welcome. What piqued your interest in humour in communications?
Thank you for having me, Kiran. Let me start from the start. I'm doing a doctorate at the university, and about a year or so ago, I was... I can give you a wee bit more background. I'm a reservist with the British Army. I was away with the British Army in France on a hiking adventure training course, and flew back from Toulouse to London Heathrow. And you know, we've all been on planes 100 times, and we all sit down. We all, you know, get ourselves comfortable, buckle ourselves in. And the video comes on about the safety video, and so we all ignore it and we stick our noses in the duty free, and the plane takes off, and it's all very routine. Yet this time, when I was coming back from Toulouse, I watched the video and I was entranced by it, and I was completely communicated. And I knew where the exits were, and I knew the process. And the reason being is because British Airways, the airline, had, in my opinion, made a very brave decision and used humour to communicate the very important safety message.
To inflate, pull the red toggle. There's also a charming whistle and light combination for attracting attention, should you be one of those people who enjoys attention. And please... fairly obviously, do not inflate your lovely life jacket until you've actually left the aircraft, at which point, toggle up, inflate away, and whistle all you like.
Now, if British Airways had got that message wrong, people could have died. And so that really struck me that this is an organisation which has a worldwide customer base of all demographics. If you sit in economy class, which is where I was sitting at the time, there is no, you know, there's no segmentation. You've got all creeds, colours, races, incomes, and interests. And yet, the British Airways decided to use a humour in the communication of this vital message. And that really struck me. And it struck me immediately. And then when I was getting off the plane with my colleagues, I was listening, earwigging, people saying, God, did you see that video about British Airways and the humour and all that? And it really struck me that humour is a really effective means of communicating, of getting through. And, I mean, I teach marketing to undergrads and postgrads at Birmingham City University. And it's well established marketing theory that if you want to break through, communicate with people, you need to emote, you need to use emotion. Let me throw a statistic at you. I'm not going to like throw statistics during this podcast, but you know, and recent research has shown that we are bombarded with 10,000 messages every day, and that research is about 6 or 7 years old now. So we are bombarded with thousands of messages every day. And how do we, as marketeers, communicate? How do we break down? How do we break through that miasma of overload information? And I ask myself, well, why don't we use emotion? And then more importantly, why, breaking that down further, humour and laughter is a form of emotion. And then I was just fascinated to see if it was possible to learn how to and develop a process where we can effectively use humour in the communication process, because I saw it so effectively done with British Airways on that flight a year ago.
It's always quite interesting, isn't it, trying to describe an emotion or trying to analyse an emotion. I think there was a comic that said as soon as you analyse humour, it's gone. But I think there are some definitions that you can use of humour to sort of help you start to understand how it works.
Yeah, I'm a year into my research now. And as part of my research, I've obviously looked into the basis of humour. And I've read reasonably far and wide, and I found that Freud wrote about 115 years or so ago a book called Jokes and Their Use on the Unconsciousness. And Freud came up with a methodology. I mean, it's not perfect, and it's been updated by many writers since, but I've yet to find a better one, where basically Freud says that humour can be broken down into effectively three elements: superiority, incongruity, and release. And that's a theory, and it's 115 years old, but it hasn't, in my opinion, from what I can see, been bettered.
So let's have a quick look at those three. So superiority is when I watch someone else make a fool of themselves. Is that right?
Yeah, classic, you know, man slips on banana skin and you all have a laugh at it.
Look at him. Can't believe it. I thought my network was number one. How could you be so foolish, Doug? I'd give anything to be that man on that network.
Doug, get EE or get network envy.
Where we as individuals feel that we are superior, well, we feel slightly superior to those who we are making fun of.
Congruity is when you have two ideas that allied in a way you're not expecting.
Yes, exactly. So incongruity is where something comes at a bit of a surprise, something that you're not expecting.
Hi, it's Ben from Southend.
Benno!
I was just wondering, is my girlfriend definitely going to end up looking like her mum?
Put it this way, mate. Did Scott ever wonder if the lovely Charlene was going to end up looking like Madge?
No.
Just enjoy them now.
Who knows? She could turn out to be a Vorderman.
Oh, that would be nice.
Foster's. Good call.
And Release, what's that one?
Yeah, well, this is very cultural driven. So you've got certain cultures, and let's take back in the day, in the 1950s and the 1960s and the 1970s, the UK, there was a very famous series of films called the Carry On films. And there are plenty of examples, but I'm going to use Carry On as an example, where they would make remarks, sexual remarks. And people, because of the cultural constraints imposed upon society, we couldn't talk openly about sexuality. We couldn't talk openly about homosexuality. And it was always referred to in the innuendo.
Do you know, I haven't done this since I was in the army, at a camp concert.
And the slightly smirk, the raised eyebrow.
Ooh!
When we can talk about those, or when we can receive humour, which allows us to release our pent-up emotion. Satire is a good example of this. We feel a release.
So I can see that there is elements of humour, and I want to come on to the cultural elements in a minute. Mm. But do you have an example of somebody using humour in a very strong way in a when they're communicating?
Ronald Reagan, so maybe some of your listeners may not know who Ronald Reagan was. He was the president of the United States in the 1980s. And he was considered in his day very much like Donald Trump. He was a former TV star. He wasn't really considered very serious. And what he perfected, and the internet is awash with examples of this, is this ability to use humor in a self-deprecating way. And there's a classic example online of in the 1984 presidential debate with Walter Mondale. Now, Walter Mondale wanted Ronald Reagan's job, and it was all very severe and august, and they had severe and august presidential televised debates. We should give some context at this, that Ronald Reagan was quite an old bloke when he became president. He was about 76, 77, very old at the time. So during the debate, the second debate it was, one of the questioners asked Ronald Reagan about his age and whether he is going to be up, really have the capacity to do the job. It's a demanding job. He said, "Look, I'd thank you very much for that question. I don't really want to make age an issue of this presidential campaign. I don't want to take advantage of my opponent's youth and inexperience." And at that, the whole audience just cracked up.
"I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit, for political purposes, my opponent's youth and inexperience."
Cut to Walter Mondale, and he just recognized that this was a great line. And at that point, you could visibly feel people's shoulders just relaxing. The seriousness had sort of been slightly let out of the event. And then once people had relaxed and started to like this very likable bloke, Ronald Reagan, he goes in with the kill. Puts it out to the questionnaires about Walter Mondale's, in his opinion, poor performance on the economic matters, on nuclear disarmament, which is a big issue back in the 1980s, again, with the Soviet Union. The effect was that Ronald Reagan won by a landslide, complete landslide. And Walter Mondale, at that moment, when Ronald Reagan had just told that, you know, good line, he realized that his campaign was over. And it just strikes me that we can use humor to break through, to not to soften people up, but to make people more receptive, make people more aware, more open to messages. And that's what I'm hoping to do.
And I think that's one of your key issues, isn't it, that you're interested in potentially the use of humour for British Army communications.
Yes, that's right. I mentioned earlier that I'm a reservist with the British Army. I have been for a few years now. And there's an organisation called 77 Brigade, which is based down in Newbury. Now, I'm hopeful, it's not confirmed yet, I'm hopeful to be able to work alongside them to help their communication output. I mean, the British Army operate all over the world, as you can imagine, and they have a public outreach. You know, how do we communicate with the local people that we sit with it? And that's fundamentally what 77 do for their job. When my background before I started teaching at Cambridge was I was working in Afghanistan for 4 years, working in psychological operations, which sounds spookier than it really is.
In essence, it is
just communication and trying to communicate most effectively with your local population. I was living in the south, in the Pashtun belt, in a place called Zabul, very conservative. Young girls, when they hit puberty, they wear the burqa. That's their 13-year-old birthday present, in a way. And the target audience was very conservative. And that's effectively what I did. And I've always been fascinated. As I say, I used to be a journalist in how to best communicate. And I'm hoping to, with the 77 Brigade, to help them improve their processes.
Through the use of humour.
And using them as a data source. I mean, they have various outputs in terms of social media, TV, video, and all the rest. And maybe if I can come up with an aid memoir, if you will, a process. Now, humour is, you know, I've talked about the three elements of humour outlined by Freud, but humour doesn't work uniformly depending on the culture. Now, if I was, for example, working in Africa with the British Army, or I was working in Afghanistan with the British Army, or even if I was working in the Balkans, where the British Army still operates, with the British Army, the Balkans, relatively European, well developed, people are relatively well educated, culturally a little bit more less illiberal than, say, Afghanistan, where it would be a Muslim society, Islamic society, very conservative. And I need to be mindful, if I'm going to overlay humour in the communication context, of the cultural differences. Now, for my research, I've learned that certain cultures approach and appreciate certain types of humour. Now, give an example in China, because of the requirement to maintain face, to take the mickey out of somebody in a form of satire would not work. It would be seen as insulting, and so therefore using that form of humour, that satire based humour, wouldn't work. And so therefore you need to be able to mould, adapt your humour output to various cultures. And there's another variable which I need to be mindful of if I'm going to do this effectively. So in essence, humour doesn't work uniformly across all cultures. There are different cultural norms depending on the culture. And that's another variable which you need to be mindful of when you're bringing developing processes for the British Army, or for anybody for that matter.
Which I suppose is why a lot of companies do steer away from it. And as you said at the beginning, British Airways was very brave in doing that. But it broke that boredom of, oh, we've all seen this before.
Yeah,
and forced you to actually concentrate. David McGee, that was absolutely fascinating description of humour in communications. Thank you very much indeed for coming onto the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College.
That's it for this week. My thanks go to guest David McGee and producer Daniel Fox. Now, we've used a lot of clips this week, so I also need to thank ITV, copyright holders for the Carry On movies, Adam and Eve / DDB, British Airways, Saatchi & Saatchi of London, and Radical Media. See you next time.